Hi, and welcome to That's My Purse Pod, the podcast all about King of the Hill. I'm Jason.
And I'm Jimmy.
So, Jimmy, what have you been up to this past week? I know you probably went to another con again.
Yeah, I was at the Pokemon Worlds Championship this weekend. And Disneyland. I did both.
Nice. Which one did you enjoy more?
Well, that's a tough one. You know, I'm going to say, strangely, that's tough. I love Pokemon a lot. But I will say, 3 days in Disneyland was fun. I think I rode every ride, so maybe, you know what? Pokemon. I got to see a giant Pikachu, so you can't beat that, right?
True. That, like, you know, Disneyland, I mean, unless there's an event going on, it's pretty much the same all the time, more or less. Whereas Pokemon, you know, that comes around, what, once a year?
Yeah, and I will say, so I got to watch all the finals. They had the finals in an arena this year, so, like, the finals for the card game and the finals for the video game. They also did Pokemon Go, and, man, a little part of me was like, oh, if you just didn't give up as a kid, maybe you would have been at Worlds, too.
Mm-hmm. You'd be the very best, like no one ever was.
Yeah. Yeah, of course. It doesn't make me want to, like, compete, though. Though I do feel like, I was telling my friend, I was like, you don't see a lot of older people competing. Even though there's no age cap, I just think you hit a certain age and, like, work takes over. You know what I mean?
What is the age that you're talking about? Like, is it all, like, 18-year-olds who are doing this, or what?
I would say, like, early to mid-20s.
Okay, I guess.
Not to give away our ages, but we're older than that.
I mean, I think we've probably touched upon our ages. Without giving our exact ages.
How much nostalgia stuff we talk about.
Yeah, I mean, talking about growing up in the 90s and 2000s, I think people can probably piece it together.
I watched Clarissa Explains It All live. Like, as it was airing. That's how old I am.
I remember when we went to D23 last year and Simple Plan was playing. And, you know, if we have any young audience members, Simple Plan was really popular in the 2000s. Like, that was their heyday. And it was funny because there were a bunch of, it was a mixed crowd. So there were a bunch of people who were, like, in their 30s and 40s. And then, like, you know, kids and teenagers and I guess people in their 20s. And it was funny because you see all the people in, like, their 30s and 40s, like, rocking out, singing along to all the songs and stuff. And then the people who are, like, in their teens are like, what is this? It was so funny because they were like, Simple Plan was like, hey, so how many of you grew up listening to our music? And, you know, all the 30s plus people were saying, woo! And then I'm just thinking, like, how many of you had sore knees this morning?
Oh, man. I don't know. I don't want to be a hater, but I do wish, like, the younger people would have let us closer.
Yeah.
They were just standing and not singing or anything. It just felt like such a miss, you know?
Yeah. No, it was clearly for us.
Yeah.
I'm getting to that age. I think we both are. I mean, we're getting to that age where, you know, when you were younger and your parents would always talk about, like, the music they listened to while growing up, and you can't help but think, oh, man, they're so weird, or you know, though, that music is so old, or, you know, things of that nature. And now you are just kind of like, you're that person now, where it's like, one of my friends is a 7th grade teacher, if not mistaken, and he tries to keep me up to date on some of the popular Gen Alpha slang that is happening now again. And I'm like, you know what? I'm fine with being old. I'm fine with not being with it. I always remember my one teacher in high school who, and he wasn't even that old. He was like in his mid or late 20s, but he constantly was like trying to relate to the younger crowd, so he'd be like, yo, what, you know, that kind of thing, and it just came across as cringy.
Wait, did he really walk in being like, yo?
Yeah, stuff like that. He'd be like, I remember one time he was getting on our case about not doing our homework, and he's like, you need to worry about your, you need to worry about your homework and not like your Yo Puff Diddy music or whatever. And I'm just like, okay.
Oh man, that just reminds me of that SNL sketch where she goes to the room, she's like, no one believed you could read. And they're like, this is an honors class.
Yeah, I'm like, I don't ever want to be that cringe in real life. So I'm like, you know what? I should just age gracefully and accept that I'm not with it.
Oh yeah, there's so much. I feel like we will. There's so much like, have you seen that weird heart thing that people make, and it's like with their fingers? Like you know how like I'm making a heart annoying. It's like we used to make hearts like that. There's like, I think it's like something like this. Now the young people are trying to make like. I know you're supposed to make a peace sign and then you curve your finger. Yeah, there we go. You make a peace sign and then you curve your finger. But this is the new heart thing. Yeah. My hand doesn't want to do this.
Well, you work with younger people, so you probably get up with all the stuff.
Oh yeah, I mean younger people, but they're like young, yeah. They're not the hip people. They're like, they let me know what children's animated shows are in. So I don't, but yeah, lately I don't know. I don't know what's in anymore. It used to be Bluey and Paw Patrol. I hope it's still that because I invested a lot into Bluey decor for my office.
I think Bluey's still popular. I have no idea, but I feel like I've seen like the cereal and other references to it. I mean, they even made fun of it in SNL this past season, so I feel like it's still relevant. Or maybe that's like a sign that it's going out when you have Bill Burr making Bluey jokes.
Oh man, I remember the Bluey thing. Bluey, I hope, yeah, maybe Bluey's out. Cars will forever be in. And I did go to Cars Land while I was at Disneyland. I'm a big Cars the movie fan, so that was great. But I always know Cars is always gonna be in.
That's good. Yeah, I think some things are timeless and like will always, regardless of the generation, will always be there. Some things have, I guess, surpassed generations, like, Simpsons has been on forever, it seems like, for example.
Oh yeah, I don't want to say maybe it's time, but maybe it's time.
I haven't watched it in many years, but I heard from, other people that it's gotten better in the past few
Oh
years
really?
'cause they've like cycled writers out, and so now they have a lot of younger writers in the writing room.
I think maybe the humor isn't for me. You know what? You know, like I've outgrown the Simpsons, like. What was that thing? There was this thing that like Lorne Michaels said, the guy from SNL, that he's like, this is the demographic we're always trying to hit. And like, maybe I've outgrown Simpsons demographic. I don't know. What have you been up to this week?
Not much, more of the same. I haven't traveled like you have. I've been largely working, catching up with friends, checking out. I think I went to a museum, kind of a makeshift or pop-up museum, if you will, the other day, which was pretty interesting. And one of the painted ladies, the those four, three, or what is it? No, sorry, it's seven houses. We just learned because this is the first time I actually counted them. The seven houses that show up in like the intro to Full House. So that was pretty fun.
There are seven houses to the intro to Full House.
Yeah, just Google Google the painted ladies, and then you'll see the houses. And those are like it's one of the last shots in the intro to Full House. My theory, I don't have the data, like maybe painted ladies have always been popular, but I feel like if somebody had the data, I'd be curious how popular they were before the launch of Full House and then after the launch of Full House.
And that's near you?
Yeah, it's walking distance. I mean, everything's walking
Okay.
distance if you have the time, but I could walk there in like, I don't know, 15 minutes, 20 minutes, something like that.
Maybe if I go to Pokemon World's next year is in San Francisco. So
Oh,
maybe if I go,
nice.
you could show me these houses.
Nice, yeah. Yeah, one of the houses is kind of a pop-up museum right now, I guess. Like, I don't think the exhibits are going to stay there permanently. It was a interesting experience, I will say.
Can you buy merch? Was there merch at this pop-up museum?
No. No.
No, Full House. House is merch.
Not at all. That was a fun show, though, talking about retro or nostalgia.
I actually prefer Step by Step better.
Yeah, that's fine. I never really watched it, so I don't have a strong opinion one way or another, but I know it was popular. I mean, it was on that block, that TGIF block.
You didn't watch all of them? You didn't watch all the.
No, I watched Family Matters, I watched Full House, and I think that was it.
Oh, I watched them all. Because remember, the crossovers is what I always looked forward to. Like when like every family would just happen to be at Disneyland or Disney World the
Yeah.
same week.
Yeah, or when I guess Urkel shows up on Full House, and I can't remember which. Yeah, that happened a lot, the crossovers.
Is that like the original cinematic universe?
Probably the
The
TGIF
TGI Fri Yeah.
cinematic universe. I mean, they were all, I mean, ABC is owned by Disney, and so made sense for them to be like, oh, have them all meet up in Disney World.
Man, was that their like tester? They were like, if we can make this universe work,
Maybe.
what else can we do?
Now that I think about it, all those shows did have episodes where they went to Disney World.
Yeah, like they always do, like during the summer, they would always take a trip to Disney World, and I'd be like, one day I'll get there. I've still never gone there, but one day.
Yeah, did you think Hank would ever go to Disney World? I feel like he wouldn't. Or if he did, he would be there for like reasons nobody else is there for. Like he'd be there to,
Well, the
I
Hall
don't
of
know,
Presidents.
yeah, go to the Hall of Presidents or check out like, I don't know, check out the how things are bolted together and make sure that they're tight enough or just something random like that.
Oh, yeah. I mean, if he does go to Disney World, I hope he brings Dale along.
That would be funny hearing his
And
conspiracy
Nancy.
theories.
Oh, man.
That'd be funny. Well, I guess that's as good of a lazy segue that I could come up with as any to get into the show. So, this one, I'm actually going to pick your brain a lot on it because I've never worked in the food industry. I mean, I guess technically I did work at a bakery for a while, but I've never worked in like actual food industry, like a restaurant before. So, like, I'm curious what, like, how much of this experience is similar. Like, how much of it is just like Hollywood and how much of it is similar to the real world, though? I feel like with all the cooking shows like The Bear and whatnot out there, maybe people are looking for a bit more authenticity. I don't know.
I'll try to do my best.
Okay. So this episode is Bobby Gets Grilled. It's season 14. So the revival, and it is episode 3. This one is going to be a very Bobby-centric episode, as you could probably guess by the name. So we start off at Robotta Chain, and people are doing the food prep and whatnot. It looks like they're trying to put together herring tempura, and then Peggy calls. They are en route to Dallas. The plan is that they are going to show up at the restaurant later that day in the evening and try it out. This is presumably the first time that they have ever been to the restaurant, which makes sense since they only recently got back to America. And they said that they're bringing the Gribbles along, and Bobby's fine with that. Their Gribbles are family. They're going to the Bush Presidential Library, and Dale makes a comment about, "Do you want some colloidal silver? It'll protect you from the Dallas 5G." And they said that they're going to stop by the restaurant for a little tour. It's funny because in that scene, or around that time of that scene, Bobby pulls out a box of hardwood charcoal. And then Hank talks about how he wants to test the new propane tank they put in, and he's going to bring the manual to make sure there's no code violations and stuff. And Bobby's now shocked because he's like, "Oh no, what's going to happen?" And Hank, it's Hank. He loves propane, and he thinks propane's the only thing people should cook with. Emilio's like, "Oh man, you look really pale. Like you look like scared mayonnaise." And Bobby is worried that his dad will be upset about the propane, and Emilio doesn't really get it. He's like, it's propane, who cares? And he's like, you know, my dad loves a few things. He loves America, my mom, me, and propane. And when I was a kid, depending on the week, propane would be above me. And like Emilio's like, oh, you know what? I'll just greet them at the door and give them sake bombs, and they'll be drunk before they get to the table. And Bobby's like, no, I'll just stage a robbery and say the thieves took only the propane. I haven't been to that many Robotas in my life, but I feel like none of them have used... I feel like they wouldn't use propane.
I don't think I've been to a Robota. Now I'm thinking about it. I bet... No, I haven't been to a Robota.
I think I've been to some here, maybe, and then I think I've been to... Definitely been to some in Japan, but I don't think I've been to, like, a ton of them. But yeah, I mean, it's... I guess a lot of the Japanese food is, like, grilled on... Like, so if you go to, like, Benihana or whatnot, or one of those hibachi grills, it's, like... I know if you look at the top, it looks like it's, like, a stove top almost. You know, it's a metal top, but I don't know how they heat it. I'm assuming... I don't think I've ever really paid attention to, like, what the heat source is.
Well, I mean, you can taste the difference, like, because you get, like, the charcoal and the smoke and all that stuff, so.
Yeah.
I get it. I don't know. Man, I do enjoy a sake bomb, though. It made me want to have a sake bomb, for sure. I haven't had one since I was younger.
Yeah, and it just shows how, like, Hank is just unnaturally obsessed with propane. Which, I mean, it's a running joke for the show, but still, it's just funny that, like, he just can't not think about propane. And, you know, and it's so much so that, like, it's almost like it's, like, Bobby trying to, like, hide, you know, worried that, oh, his dad's gonna find, like, his adult magazines or, you know, find the packet of cigarettes or something like that. He's, like, so freaked out about Hank not seeing propane in the restaurant.
Oh, yeah, and then just, like, yeah, no propane in the restaurant? I don't know, Bobby's never been strictly only a propane guy. They did use charcoal that one time.
Yep.
So he's dabbled. He's dabbled in other heat sources.
Yep. Well, so we get to the next scene. The Hills and the Gribbles show up, and they're greeted by the employees. Apparently, along with Emilio, they have two other employees who aren't introduced. We just see them. You know, Peggy does this kind of spiel about, you know, this is a restaurant that blends the Japanese food with the Texas, you know, German hill country, and... Peggy is just so proud of him. She walks up and hugs, and of course, Hank being Hank says, come on, Peggy, the staff won't respect a mama's boy, and Hank gives Bobby a handshake. When you look at the decor, it represents, you know, the Japanese culture, but also the German culture, so you have, like, some medieval German artifacts, like halberds and whatnot, but then you have, like, Japanese posters, so kind of an interesting setup, and I just find it funny because it's like, oh, the last time there was a Japanese-German fusion, it wasn't really that great for the world. But, you know, maybe this restaurant will be different. Hank, naturally being Hank, like, his priority after greeting Bobby is to go in the back and check the propane grills. And so he starts heading there and Bobby tries to stop him. And then Hank sees the charcoal grill and he's like, Oh, I get it. This is like what you have set up just for the tourists, and the propane's in the back. And Bobby, like, drops the fact that, you know, no, I use this, you know, this charcoal to grill. And Hank's upset. He's like, we went over all the specs on the phone. That was one of the best times I had. Were all those uh-huhs lies? And, you know, Bobby's like, well, you know, I considered propane... But, you know, I want to make this as authentic as possible, and this is just not how they cook the food. And, you know, Hank's like, are you sure you're not just following some kind of foreign trend? But, you know, Bobby's sticking to his guns. He's like, I want to have an authentic experience. And Hank is upset, and he's like, I get it. Anything traditional is bad. Well, I just need to clear my head with some authentic Texan history. Come on, guys. And Dale's like, I need to use the bathroom. And Hank's like, well, wait until the library to pee. And he's like, okay, but I don't know if the dam's going to hold. To be honest, there's a little breach already.
I don't know. I feel like some restaurants would do that, actually. It's like, have kind of like a little facade area of like, make you think this is how it's done, but really it's like this other way.
Yeah, but who would set up charcoal as a tourist thing? Who's saying like, ooh, look at that authentic charcoal grill in the front. Oh, Sally, we are at a real restaurant, aren't we?
That is very, well, I mean, Hank thought it was. Hank really wanted the propane to be there very badly.
Yeah, I just think that's Hank's thing. Like, we've seen in several episodes that Hank won't entertain the thought of any other kind of heat source for cooking other than propane. Like, anything else is just criminal. You know, electric stoves and charcoal grills and wood grills and butane and all that stuff is just abhorrent to him. Propane, like, he just has this unnatural obsession with propane to that point where he's just like legitimately mad that Bobby's not using it.
Do you think he would have come to the restaurant if Bobby was honest in the beginning and like, we don't cook with propane? Do you think he would have been like, let's go eat somewhere else?
I think he would have still come. I don't know that they would have dropped by in the morning. I think he would have still come in the evening, but he would probably be pouting the whole time. That's my thought anyway.
Yeah, I do. I do love where he's like, we can't even use the bathroom, Dale. We got to get out of this place.
Oh, yeah. So we see them get back into the truck, and Hank's upset that Bobby just can't cook with a propane grill like everybody else. And, you know, Hank says his classic line, that boy ain't right. And Peggy's like, oh, you know, come on. He's not your little boy anymore. He's his own man. And he's like, okay, that man ain't right. Back at the restaurant, Emilio drops that they are running out of what's called the Binchotan charcoal, which I guess is the specific kind of hardwood charcoal that is used in this type of restaurant. I've personally never used it. I don't know, Jimmy, have you ever used it for any kind of cooking?
I have not.
Yeah, I don't know what makes it special other than maybe just that's the traditional way to use it. I tried to do some research and I couldn't figure out much, but I'm also not an expert on stuff. But apparently, yeah, it's what's commonly used. So, so they're running low. They have one box left, essentially. And they can't get from their current supplier because Hitachiya, which is the name of the restaurant, went out of business, which makes sense because they're the only customer that they have. But they did give him a referral to a new supplier. So they call him and, you know, they're trying to order 10 22-pound bags. And the guy on the other line says that he won't fulfill the order for him. And Bobby's like, why? You know, we got money. We need this. And the supplier won't sell it to him because he's not Japanese. So it's a theme for this whole episode, at least from the Bobby side, is going to be cultural appropriation. So we're going to go down that wormhole today. I don't know. So I'm not here to like, I don't know. I'm trying to think of a nice way to put it. We'll dive into it a little later when they actually meet the guy. So this next scene you actually probably already saw in the trailer, or one of the trailers, I should say. They're at the presidential library and the tour guide's like, yes, this is the baseball that George Bush threw. And Hank's like, you know, super excited. And he's like, oh, and this is the pen that was used for passing the bill that allowed for offshore drilling. And Hank's like, oh, so many jobs created with one pen stroke. They're asking to see something more interesting. And Hank's like, what do you mean? This is interesting. You know, and he's like, I love a man who respects history, talking to the tour guide. And then Peggy is like, oh, well, let's see if we can get that pen and maybe I can kill myself with it. And Nancy's like, don't you dare, otherwise you're leaving me alone. Now we cut over to Bobby, who is at a frat house to get Chain, because they need Chain's help. Bobby kind of guilts him in, saying like, look, you're the majority owner, so you need to show up. And then Chain drops another bleeped F-bomb. They go to this restaurant to speak to Mr. Yoshida, the person they spoke to over the phone. Surprise, surprise, he is a black person. So there's this whole thing where they're like, oh, we need to talk to Mr. Yoshida. And he's like, that is me. And he has kind of like a Japanese accent, if you will. And they're just okay, Chain's a jerk. So Chain's like, no, we need to talk to, you know, Mr. Yoshida. He's probably a small Japanese man. Well, get your boss out here. And, you know, Bobby kind of pieces it together. It's like, no, Chain, this is Mr. Yoshida. And then they're like, what? But you're black. And he explains that he was adopted by a Japanese family, raised in Japan. So he is effectively Japanese. He will not do business with a restaurant that's trying to culturally appropriate. He does not appreciate the fact that Bobby is a white boy trying to make Japanese food. You know, he's offended that they brought a fake Japanese person and to negotiate with him, referring to Chain. And he's like, I'm Laotian. And so he says, Asians can't steal culture from other Asians. But Bobby just keeps pleading that he wants to make the food authentic. And he's, you know, Mr. Yoshida's like, no, Japanese businesses only. And then Chain pulls the old, do you know who my father is thing? And he's, do you know who Ted Wasanasan is? He's like, oh, did he play for such and such Japanese baseball team? He's like, no, he's, you know, he's rich and he's the owner of the business. And you know what? He will start his own Bitchotan restaurant and run you out of the state. And he's like, well, then I will sue for racial discrimination against a black small business. He's like, wait, you can't be Japanese and black. He's like, and if there was a Laotian martial art, I would totally use it. He's like, there is a Laotian martial art. It's called Muay Lao. And he's like, don't tell me about my culture. I know a martial art and it's called Suck It. And then Bobby, you know, rushes them out before it escalates. So, yeah, I have very mixed feelings about this because there's so many food places that are fusion-y that I don't really have a problem with. And I don't know, there's something about being able to appreciate another culture's food. Like, there's just something that doesn't set right with me with this idea that, like, only people of a certain ethnic background are allowed to learn how to cook certain foods or serve certain foods. So, yeah, I don't know. Like, this, then it also shows the same intersectionality kind of there, too, with the fact that the guy isn't ethnically Japanese. He's culturally Japanese. He grew up in Japan, so he's culturally Japanese, but he's ethnically black. So, but it's also kind of like, oh, it's possible to be a different race and still develop an appreciation for a different race or something. So it was all over the place for me with this whole interaction.
Yeah, I don't know. I've always taken the same stance on cultural appropriation kind of thing, where it's like, I think it's fine if you want to like uphold like a tradition of some sort, you know, and you respect it. That's one thing, and it's another thing of making fun of it. So like, Bobby is trying to uphold and respect the tradition of the cooking style.
Mm-hmm.
So there's no problem in that at all. Like, I don't know, I go a whole tangent about like, I don't really care if people wear like, I'm half Mexican, I don't care, like, people wear ponchos and sombreros. You know, as long as it's, you know, if that's what they like to wear, and it's fine, and they're not making fun of anyone, then, you know, it's fine. It's spreading the culture, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I think we are in a time now, unlike any other time in history. I mean, there's always been trade and whatnot, but, you know, you couldn't get something from, you know, 1,000 years ago... If you were just a regular Joe, you couldn't afford some luxury item from China or something if you were in Europe. But nowadays, with internet, with, you know, the idea that I could be on a plane and in half a day I'm on the other side of the world, you know, all that stuff, it's just, you know, a lot of these geographic barriers that kind of kept our cultures separate don't really exist anymore. And I think that there is definitely a nice thing about the mixture. Like, we had a friend back in Austin, I think his restaurant's still open, you know, he had a restaurant that actually was on Shark Tank called Cilantro, and like, its whole thing, and it was like early, because I, you know, Korean-Mexican fusion food, I think it's like really popular now, but I think at that time it wasn't as popular, but that was like his whole thing, it was Korean-Mexican fusion, you can get like a kimchi taco or whatever.
Yeah, I mean, I'm all, stop putting things in tacos, people. Not everything can be put in a taco. I think we need to move on from that. That's my little unhingedness about, I think some things are overdone. Not that it's cultural appropriation. I think it's just an overdone thing. But, yeah, like, you know, fusion food is so popular now. I feel like every other restaurant is a fusion restaurant.
Yeah, there was a point in time where I had a preference for authentic food, but now, as I'm getting older and I guess wiser or whatever, there's nothing wrong with fusion in my mind. Like, you know, why not? Why not try to mix two different types of food? And actually, when you, like, travel the world anyway, you do see fusion at this point in time. There is actually, like, Indian-Chinese fusion food out there, for example. If you go to a Chinese restaurant in India, it's going to be different than a Chinese restaurant in America in a lot of ways. And so, you know, fusion food in and of itself is not a bad thing. It's, you know, I wouldn't call it authentic, so to speak, but it's not bad. It's its own thing.
Yeah. And I mean, like, I don't know. I just feel like food, I think fusion food can be authentic, and like the style of the cooking is authentically like. Like, if you think about, like, because I do pastries, but I cook with different spices and stuff. So, my food could be considered a fusion of things, but I learned cooking traditionally French style. So, my technique is always French. So, like, I'm very traditionally French style cooking, but my food and my flavor palette is very, like, inspired by, I guess, my background. Just like Bobby, I'm Korean-Mexican, so Korean and Mexican flavors would inspire me, because that's what we grew, you know.
Yeah.
And I feel like everyone, even today, is like, neighborhoods you're growing up with aren't necessarily reflective of like who you are ethnically. Like, you grew up in a certain neighborhood, you grew up eating like certain foods. Like, if you grew up here in Texas, you might have grown up eating tamales and enchiladas and, like, you know, like really mole and just all this traditional Mexican food.
Mm-hmm.
And you take that with you, and you're like, I understand these flavors.
Yeah, San Antonio has a heavy Latin population. In fact, I think it's majority Latin population in San Antonio, where I grew up. And like, one of our traditions in the city is that when Christmas rolls around, you get tamales for Christmas. That is just the thing that you do in San Antonio. And it doesn't matter if you're, you know, black, white, Latino, Asian. That's just something you do if you're a San Antonian. And that was influenced by the Mexican culture, the Tex-Mex culture in San Antonio. And it's perfectly fine in my mind.
Yeah. I feel like we'll learn more. I have more thoughts, but there's another group of people we're going to meet in this episode, and I'll share my thoughts about that.
Yeah, let's move forward. So we get back to the library, and, you know, they're showing the leather gloves that Bush used to clean the invasive cedar out of his Crawford, Texas ranch. And Hank's like, so he protected us from both foreign and domestic threats. And then Dale goes on about how all of that was a false flag operation. It was a cover-up for MS-13, creating a tunnel that goes from Acapulco to the Denver airport, which is absolutely something Dale would say. And then Hank is like, why did we have to bring Dale? Well, then we just have Nancy here. And Hank's like, well, that's fine. Nancy's a good hang. And Peggy's like, do you want to give people the impression that you have two beautiful wives? They'll think you're a Mormon elder. Dale, then we get more Dale. And I honestly kind of thought we were going to get this character just with the way the world has changed since King of the Hill went off air. So, you know, Dale starts going off on his conspiracy theories, and he talks about how, the Supreme Court didn't decide the 2000 election. It was decided by the United Nations. They decide all of our elections and Miss Universe. And Hank goes to the tour guide, and he's like, I'm sorry. And he's like, no, we get at least one of these a day, so whatever. And then one of the guys on the tour, he's like, I read on Newsmax that William Rehnquist was actually a double agent for Russia. And Dale's like, no, he's not. I mean, you're right about him being a double agent, but he was a double agent from the Vatican. And then Dale pulls up his phone. He's like, you can read all about it on my Substack. And so it shows Dale has a Substack that's just all conspiracy theories, and someone else wants to subscribe. And Hank's getting upset because he's like, no, Dale is for entertainment purposes only. And then Dale's like, no, I've got the truth. What do you want to hear? Do you want to hear about Laura Bush's inaugural gown? Or do you want to hear about George Bush's secret twin brother, Jub, who took George's place when he died after eating a pretzel? And then they're like, yeah, we want to hear about that. And so he's like, Jub, or as the Secret Service called Jubya, had a third nipple, and that's why you never saw him with his shirt off. And everybody's starting to follow Dale, and Hank's, you know, Hank is Hank, and he's just like, oh, God. So Dale's always been kind of a conspiracy theorist, but his conspiracy theorists were always around, like, his conspiracy theories were always around things like aliens and, you know, things like that. You know, since the show went off the air, we've had more conspiracy theorists, and we're not a political podcast, so we're not going to go into the politics of anything. But, you know, we're just going to point out that, you know, with people like Alex Jones and stuff, they've really come to the forefront, like, thanks to the internet, YouTube, all of that stuff, making it easy to spread this information and get it out there. Alex Jones actually has been around for a long time, but he didn't really become a, let's call it a household name or a well-known name until the 2010s when King of the Hill was off the air. Yeah, so, you know, I think with these changes in the world, I think they felt like they needed to, like, amp up Dale a little bit or kind of keep his conspiracy theory persona, but add a little flavor to it to reflect the changes in the world. What are your thoughts?
I think this is the normal progression for the world. I think Dale stayed the same. I think with the internet, with Reddit, with everyone can have a blog now, you know, with Twitter or X or whatever it's called now, whatever it'll be called in the future, everyone, everyone's so more connected. So all these, like, being a conspiracy theorist is not out of the norm as it used to be. You know what I mean? Like, Dale was kind of just like the out of the norm person in the original seasons, but now he's kind of just like one of many.
Yeah.
And I think he's like, but you know, it hasn't gone to his head. He wasn't like, oh, I've captured the audience. He kind of just like, this is what I do.
You know, that's a good point. In like the original 13 seasons, you almost never saw anybody take Dale seriously when he talked about his conspiracy theories. And here you have him talking about his conspiracy theories, and he's, like, got people listening to him. So it does kind of reflect how the world has changed. And now people actually take somebody like Dale seriously.
Yeah, weren't they all cheering Jub?
Yeah.
They're like, Jub, Jub, Jub.
Yeah, because, like, in the previous seasons, Dale would always go off on his conspiracy theories. Pretty much every episode that had Dale in there would have Dale mention at least one conspiracy theory, but everybody would either just ignore him, shut him down, or, you know, Hank would be like, shut up, Dale, or something to that effect. And now he's, like, actually being listened to, so it does kind of reflect the changing times.
Yeah, I also found it interesting that Hank was like, Nancy's a good hang. Like, that just seemed weird to say. Not like anything's going on with them, but just like that lingo is kind of weird coming out of Hank's mouth.
Yeah.
Right? Or no?
The lingo is kind of weird. And also, you don't really ever see Hank and Nancy hanging out together. There's like that one episode where he goes and helps them with the hot tub. Besides that, you don't really see the two of them alone. So I don't even realize, like, how Hank even has an opinion about whether or not Nancy is a good hang.
I think Nancy's just chill. And that's what he likes. He's like, I mean, I feel like anyone next to Dale would be a good hang.
Yeah, probably.
He's like, that person is a good hang. I don't know. I think Bill's a good hang, though. He doesn't really cause any trouble when he's out and about. He's just trying to please everyone, so.
Yeah, but then there's those times where his depression and, you know, not to attack anybody's mental health, but Bill is definitely one of those people whose depression can probably rub people the wrong way when he will inevitably, like, just bring up something very downer that just kills everybody's mood. Otherwise, Bill's a decent person, so I don't know. So, moving forward, we see Bobby goes to an Italian restaurant. Guess the restaurant community in Dallas is pretty tight, which I imagine is the same in any city, to some extent, at least in a given neighborhood. So, you know, he goes there and, you know, the people at the restaurant greet him and he says he's looking for a new charcoal supplier because he can't run his restaurant until he gets more charcoal. So it's technically closed right now. And this Italian restaurant has a wood-fired oven. So Bobby figures, oh, these people must have some kind of supplier that could probably hook me up with the type of charcoal I need. And it's kind of funny because they kind of put on a little bit of a mafioso persona where they're like, yeah, what's in it for us? And they're like, you know, you could do us a favor. We can exchange leases. We need, your space is big. We need a place for a bigger wood oven. And, you know, we'll put you in a safer part of town. And then Bobby's just like laughing. And he's like, oh, let me see. Are you making an offer I can't refuse? The two guys at the restaurant are like, oh, that's racist. You know, not all Italians are that way. It's like, do I look like Tony Soprano to you? That show is the reason I canceled HBO. And they're like, you know, Mr. Yoshida warned us against you. And then he shows a flyer that they have that has a picture of Bobby and it calls him a cultural appropriator. So it's Mr. Yoshida is like spreading this propaganda that Bobby is a bad guy. Bobby is like, well, no, this isn't good or whatever. And the Italian guy is like, okay, well, how about I make you a proposition you can't say no to? And Bobby's like, oh, come on. That's just another way of saying make an offer I can't refuse. And then they're like, whoa, that's racist. So, oh, gosh. So it's funny. It's funny that, one, they kind of lean into the stereotype a little bit, but then they get offended when Bobby points it out. But then also, like, how much time does Mr. Yoshida have that he was able to create these flyers and distribute them in what was presumably an hour?
Well, I mean, with Canva.
That's true.
Anything's possible. Not sponsored by Canva, everyone. But if you want to, Canva, we're here.
I don't know. This is like, I know I'm overthinking it, but it's just like, how did he get all those out? And then why is he doing that? Like, why is he so obsessed with, like, ruining Bobby's day?
You know, also think about this. How many authentic Japanese, like, grills are there that, you know, he's doing well on business?
Yeah, I mean, that's a good point, too. And it's also, like, Dallas is a huge city. Like, there's room for more than one Japanese restaurant there. It's not like one... Like, it's not like it's a small town where there's just two Japanese restaurants competing for business.
Yeah, the flyer was funny. I'm surprised that it was just a generally good picture of Bobby.
Yeah.
You know, I thought that it would have been like, when, you know, like when someone takes a picture of you and you're not really looking?
Mm-hmm.
And you're not ready for the picture and it's like ugly? I thought it was going to be one of those candid kind of pictures.
Yeah.
Of Bobby, but no. It's probably just taken off the website.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. Like, they got it off of his Instagram or his website or something like that. Like, one of the professional photos he has.
It was. It was interesting, though, that they wanted to trade leases.
Yeah. One, I don't think you... I mean, I guess there's probably a legal way to make that happen. But then, two, it's like, is that really, like, the better option? Both of you would have to spend a lot of money renovating the space. So, I don't know.
I also feel like... there must be someone out of town who sells this charcoal. You know what I mean? Like, we could ship it from out.
Oh, like Fort Worth or something.
Yeah, like, there can't be just one guy in this whole, like, North Texas area.
Exactly. Hey, it makes the story work out, so.
That's true.
Back at Robotic Chain, Joseph was talking about how tough it is to be a white guy. Like, I don't even know what I'm supposed to dress up like at Halloween. And it's funny because in the background, Emilio's chopping up vegetables. And then when Joseph mentions that he's white, Emilio's going to speak up. And then Bobby kind of puts up his finger to say, you know, just don't say anything. Which this kind of indicates to me that Joseph still doesn't know that John Redcorn's his real father.
No, because he identifies as a Caucasian white guy.
And then they talk about, like, oh, you know, I can't dress up like Speedy Gonzalez anymore. And then Bobby's like, well, that is pretty racist. And Emilio's like, Speedy Gonzalez is racist? Nah, he's a hero, man. You know, he represents standing up against the American imperialism, you know, Sylvester the Cat. And then, you know, which I guess is a funny response. But Bobby makes a quote about Mel Blanc. And then, like, who's that? He's like, oh, you know, he voiced everybody, you know, Bugs Bunny, Daffy Duck, Porky Pig. And Emilio's like, oh, Mel Blanc, he stole a lot of jobs from Latinos and farm animals. And then Bobby's like, how do you pass a test when so many people are marking it? So Bobby's, and I think that's a fair question, because Bobby, in his mind, he's like, look, I just want to merge the two foods that I like, German food and Japanese food. I am a professional chef. I respect the craft. I want to make it as authentic as possible. And yet everybody is in my face about it. I also kind of find it funny, and I feel like you probably have more to say about it than I do, or you're, since you are part Mexican, you can, or you have Mexican ancestry, you could answer it better. But like, I never really, I personally never found Speedy Gonzalez offensive. Like, he's a hero. He's always the good guy. He's the smart guy. He's never sleazy or anything like that. He's practically the Flash or Sonic the Hedgehog. And I mean, I guess, yeah, he has the accent and he's wearing the sombrero and everything. But other than that, he's not a bad representation.
Oh, no, definitely not. Like, well, growing up, I used to think when I was a little kid that Speedy Gonzalez and I were related. I thought he was part of my family because we share the same last name. So anytime we went to Six Flags when I was a kid, I was like, we had to see him because he's family. So I have a whole, my parents have a whole bunch of pictures of us with Speedy Gonzalez throughout the years because I thought we were like, I thought, well, that's when I thought Looney Tunes were real, but I thought he was related to us. But I mean, I don't think he was ever a bad serious. I mean, what was his friend's name? The slow one.
I can't remember. But I know who you're talking about. I would argue that if anybody is like a bad stereotype, maybe he is because he's always lazy or whatever. But other than that, and don't get me wrong, there are absolutely bad stereotypes of characters out there that are signs of a past time that we should be glad we're past. But then there's all, like, not every single character, though, who is, like, an ethnic minority is a bad character.
His name was Slowpoke Rodriguez.
There you go.
But I really like Speedy Gonzalez. I, you know what? I don't know what it's worth coming from me, but as a half-Mexican guy, if you guys want to dress up like Speedy Gonzalez and do him justice, not mocking Speedy, because we are family, then I say go ahead and do it. I think it's a great costume. I bet Joseph looked good as Speedy Gonzalez.
He would. Back at the library, they are in like a mock version of the Situation Room. And this is like kind of an interactive part of the tour where they get to reenact a crisis. And Dale's like, oh, please let it be the Kennedy assassination, the Ted Kennedy assassination. And I like how Peggy's like, oh, that Kennedy family is a train wreck. And Nancy's like, I'd like to ride that train. So they're supposed to work as a team. And the scenario is the September 2008 crisis when the government debated the takeover of Freddie Mac and Fannie Mae. Hank volunteers to play the role as president. And he starts to give the oath. And then the tour guide's like, a simple yes would have done just fine. Peggy is supposed to be Paulson, and then Nancy's like, oh, can I be the Fannie Mae president? And they're like, sure. And then Dale's like, I want to be David Rockefeller, the head of the Trilateral Commission. And then he tells the dude nearby that he's the Queen of England who secretly ran everything and Bush bowed to and whatnot. And it's like, can you prove it's not true? And then another dude is like, I want to be Epstein. And then Hank's like, from Welcome Back, Carter. And then another woman's like, I want to be Obama's Kenyan handler. And Hank's like, Obama was born in Hawaii. That's reason enough not to vote for him. Aside, you know, you don't have to make things up. Which, I don't know, I guess sounds like something Hank would say. I mean, we know he's always had a problem with New York and California. I guess Hawaii, too, would probably be a state he'd have an issue with. The guide is trying to back out because he's like, yeah, this is going too crazy. And then Dale's like, okay, fine, I'll be vice president.
Oh, yeah, because, like, what does Hank say? Like, how am I supposed to do this if no one's going to respect the office?
Yep.
You know, at least Dale is a good enough friend to understand that Hank's upset.
Mm-hmm.
And to change his ways.
Mm-hmm, yep. So back at the restaurant, Bobby shows up and Ted is there. He definitely looks older. And he has a different voice, but he also has a different voice actor. So it doesn't sound like Teddy. In fact, he sounds a little less intimidating than the original voice actor. But whatever, we're not going to get into that. Ted wants Bobby to use propane because it's cheap, it's easy to come across, and it will get the job done. He doesn't want the restaurant to fail because, you know, it's kind of one of those domino effects things. If the restaurant fails, then, oh, Chain will drop out of business school and he'll go back to being a DJ. Bobby is upset. He doesn't want to use propane. He wants to be authentic. And Ted just doesn't care. Like, Ted just cares about the money. He's like, you know, I'd like to open an authentic Laotian restaurant, but I can't. Nobody knows what the food is. So, anyway, now all of a sudden Emilio comes out. It's like, oh, some ethnic association wants to meet with you. Bobby wants Ted to help, and Ted's like, no, I won't help. I'm a silent partner. He's like, well, then why do you keep, you know, getting on my case if you're supposed to be silent? So it's like the German Association. I forget what their name was. I think like the Dallas German Association or something like that. They want to talk about the menu, and they're worried about Bobby being a cultural appropriator. They show them the flyer, and these guys are German. They're concerned about the fusion, and they ask if Bobby is German. Are you racially pure? And Bobby's like, are you really going to go there? And then they're like, Hill, that's not a German name. Wait, are you related to Cotton Hill? He's like, he's my grandfather. And then he's like, he machine gunned my grandfather. And then Bobby's like, he's one of the 50 men. They're like, you know what? We'll try your food. And if it's authentic, we'll write about it. And if it's not authentic, we'll write about it too. But, you know, kind of as a threat. Yeah, this was a funny interaction.
I love the callback to the 50 men.
Yeah.
Like, that was pretty funny.
Though the story Cotton tells in season one, it's Japanese people like that he shot and killed. So it's like, okay, wait, so what?
Maybe Bobby just remembers, and like, this is another group of men that Cotton. Maybe there's two groups of 50 men.
Yeah, maybe it was actually 100 men. Because Cotton always brought up that it was Japanese people, like in Returning Japanese, when he sees like the dead Japanese ghosts as a hallucination and whatnot. So it's like, oh, he machine gunned a grandfather. Or maybe it was like, he killed 50 Japanese people in like one German.
Oh, or it could be like 49. Maybe there was a German there.
Yeah, maybe.
So, I also find like, well, I don't know if Ted's concerned about the business doing well or not.
Mm-hmm.
Ted's more concerned that Chang stays in business school.
Yeah.
And if the business fails, then Chang will drop out and become a DJ again. Which is so I could see it.
Yeah, I think Ted, I mean, even before I watched this episode, when I heard that Chain owned part of the restaurant with Bobby, I knew for a fact that it was going to be essentially Ted who was bankrolling it all and giving a restaurant to Chain and using Bobby for his actual cooking skill, because Chain doesn't know how to cook.
Yeah, so I just would love to see the DJ set. I feel like that should have been like a after credits little bonus thing.
Yep. So back at the library, Dale's talking about how Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac are the same person. And Hank's like, no, they're not even people. They're businesses. And all of a sudden, just things go crazy. And, you know, Hank's like, you're not David Rockefeller. And one of the guys gets mad at Hank and grabs the shoe, the same shoe that was thrown at George Bush during one of his speeches, and throws it at Hank. And Peggy's like, oh, history's repeating itself. And then Hank just decides to leave. Back at the restaurant, Bobby's lamenting, like, you know what, maybe I should just use propane, but then he doesn't want to be authentic. And so Emilio's like, well, would a restaurant food be better if you use propane? And Bobby genuinely says he doesn't think so. And so Emilio kind of gives him a pep talk and is like, you know, I've worked at other restaurants owned by different, you know, groups. Like, I worked at an Italian restaurant owned by a Chinese lady. I worked at a Persian restaurant owned by an Irish lady. I worked at a Denny's. All of them had Latinos in the kitchen. But you know what? They all closed down because none of them had passion for what they're doing. I think you're a great chef. And I think, you know, you're doing what you're doing. And so Bobby decides, okay, you know what? We're going to close the restaurant for the day. We're going to cook one last meal, the meal that my parents are going to be here for. And of course, I'm going to invite Mr. Yoshida. And, you know, Ted's already here, so I have Ted over. And I think we even see like a still from this in one of the promo trailers that came out before the season dropped. And so they're like, we'll do one last event with this final box of charcoal, and hopefully this will save us. So dinner night hits. Bobby's like, I've got a dinner that will blow your socks off. And somebody replies like, isn't it knock your socks off? Bobby mentions this is not authentic Japanese or German food. It's authentic Bobby food. He loves food and he loves to cook. And Peggy's like, that's right. I once saw him dip a fruit pie into tuna fish. And Bobby's like, yep, well, so let's your taste buds do the talking. And, you know, they're serving the food, and the food looks great. Hank doesn't want to eat it because it's not cooked with propane. Everybody loves it. Mr. Yoshida loves it. The Germans love it. Hank finally agrees to try it, and sure enough, he loves it. It's got the sausage has like rice and pickled daikon in it. Hank is happy that everybody's happy. He didn't even bother to spit the food out, which is funny because he walked up to Bobby and Bobby's like, "Oh, you're going to spit the food out?" And Hank's like, "No, I've come around. Everybody loves the food. It's good food. And you know what? Propane wasn't even available in the 17th century. So maybe if it was, they would have used it." And Bobby's like, "Sure." So they toast to Bobby and then they try. Oh, gosh. They try sauerkraut ice cream, or that's one of the things they say, and it's, which sounds terrible. Like, I would never try that. And then they're talking about, oh, how they once had bologna and Twinkie and orange juice combined, and that's kind of how the episode ends. And I like that it ended on a high note. You know, everybody tried the food. I like that Bobby kind of stood his ground, like, yeah, you know what? This isn't authentic German food. This isn't authentic Japanese food. This is a fusion food that I like because these are flavors that I enjoy.
Yeah, I love how we're getting back to, like, Hank kind of respecting who Bobby is, and Bobby's being his own original person and all that. So I really love all that. I love, my favorite thing that Bobby ate all the time was, like, those fruit pies. Mm-hmm. I do not appreciate it being dipped in tuna, though.
That sounds gross. Who would do that?
But I'm glad. You know what? Bobby loves food. That's, and he's, I guess he was on the, like, cutting edge of fusion before fusion was a big thing.
Yeah, and I do like that Hank came around. Like, he was, like, you know, grimacing with his arms crossed. Like, I'm not going to eat this. Like, you know, like, kind of like a little kid almost. And eventually, after he's, like, nudged and he watches everybody eating and enjoying the food, he finally agrees to, and he likes it. I do like that he had to kind of be like, oh, well, you know, propane didn't exist. Like, he had to, like, justify in his mind why it's all right that Bobby uses charcoal. And he's like, oh, well, I get it. Propane didn't exist back then, so that's why the Japanese never used it. So it makes sense why you would want to use it. He just has to, like, rationalize it in his head. But you know what? If that's what it takes, then I'm fine with it.
Yeah, and I think Bobby also was like, you know what, if you need to do all that, then, you know, okay. Also, I really love that at the end of the day, Bobby was like, you know what, this isn't traditional Japanese food. This isn't just traditional German food. This is my food and how I cook it, and it's my authentic self on the plate. And I think that's what really won everyone over, that Bobby was kind of like, this is the food that I love.
And that's kind of the purpose of fusion food in general, is like, you're saying, I like these two flavors. Oftentimes the flavors are actually pretty complementary. And you're like, yeah, I want to combine them into like one awesome flavor. And I don't see the problem with that. Like, I get it if you're being disrespectful to the culture, you're making fun of it in a way or something like that. I get it. That's not acceptable. But having an appreciation for it is fine. Like, one of my friends, he's one of the whitest guys I know. He's, like, pale. But he's, you know, he's a professional cook. He makes, like, some of the best bulgogi I've ever eaten. He's a white guy. And he's, you know, he uses his own food. Like, he would get grass-fed bison to make the bulgogi and whatnot. And it's like, yeah, okay, maybe that's not exactly how a Korean would do it. But it's still, you know, it's still bulgogi and it still tastes great. So, you know, I think it's acceptable. And I also like Emilio's statement, because it is so true. A lot of these ethnic restaurants will have, and actually Freakonomics, now that I think about it, many years ago, their podcast had an episode about this where it was like talking about, would you eat at a restaurant, like a Chinese restaurant, for example? If you went to a Chinese restaurant and none of the staff was Chinese, would you eat there? Or would you be like, oh, this isn't an authentic restaurant? But then they point out the fact that a lot of these restaurants, like the front house, will be of whatever ethnicity it is. You know, you're at a Chinese restaurant, they're Chinese. You're an Italian restaurant, it's Italian. You go into the kitchen, it's like Latinos or white guys or you know, all the above, you know, kind of thing.
Yeah, I just think, I don't know. My philosophy is food for everyone. All foods for all peoples.
Exactly. I mean, I think that this, they were trying to tell a story in this episode. Like, I don't know that this stuff happens in real life. Like, people are really just losing their mind over somebody making a fusion restaurant. But I mean, I'm sure it does happen, but maybe not to this level. But, you know, it makes for a good story, ultimately. And I think it was nice to see Bobby kind of stand up for himself and just make this work. And it worked out for him in the end. And, you know, Mr. Yoshida is going to sell him the charcoal, so.
Yeah, win-win. Wins for everyone. Everyone loved the food. And Bobby gets to still stay true to what he believes.
Granted, I think the restaurant should shut down for having sauerkraut ice cream on the menu.
Well, you know, Uchiko here in Austin used to do a fish sauce ice cream.
Really?
Yeah.
Did you try it?
It was gross.
I imagine it would be.
But it's because they have a rotating ice cream menu. Like, one of the flavors is always a different flavor every week, so I think they just ran out of idea.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think they made that as a bet or something like that.
But I always believe everything can work. Like, I think there's a version of a good sauerkraut ice cream. I just don't know what that is.
Yeah, I don't know how you could do it. It'd be like if you made kimchi ice cream or something. It'd be terrible. Though, I will say, there's some fusions that I didn't think would work that did. Like, about a year ago or so, one of my friends made cookies. I can't remember what, like, the base of the cookie was. If it was, like, white chocolate chip or if it was a sugar cookie or whatever. But they mixed in gochujang, which is, like, you know, the Korean spicy paste or whatever. They mixed gochujang in the cookie batter, and you would think, oh, you know, sweet and spicy doesn't work, but the cookie actually tastes pretty good.
Oh, that's interesting. I don't know. I mean, I definitely would try. Was it just like a plain cookie, or was it like a chocolate chip with gochujang in it? Or
I can't remember if it was like a sugar cookie or if it was a white chocolate chip. I don't think it was chocolate chip. I remember that much, but it wasn't like just, so it wasn't a plain sugar cookie with gochujang. There was a flavor to the cookie itself, too. I just can't remember what exactly it was. But they added gochujang to the batter, and it actually tasted really good.
Interesting.
So sometimes it works. I don't know. I don't like sauerkraut in general, so a sauerkraut ice cream I don't think would work for me. But, you know, if I ever stumble across it, I will try it, and I will report back on how it tasted. I have a feeling it's going to be awful, but, you know, we'll see.
And I probably won't be tasting it, so sorry, guys.
Do you think you would ever eat at Robotic Chain, minus the sauerkraut ice cream?
I don't know. That was like a sausage, right? It was like something with daikon.
Yeah.
Yeah, that looked really good. I mean, it was animated, but I do think I would eat there. I think some of the, like, tempura, like, fish. A lot of the stuff he was, like, dishing out would sound pretty decent. And sake bomb, so
yeah.
Who can go wrong?
Well, do you have anything else on this episode?
No, I've been really loving these episodes. I know, like, when we first started, I was kind of, like, harping on the first episode. But now that we're going through, I've been loving the past two that I've watched. So, I've been enjoying it. I'm excited for the next season, or the next few episodes.
Yeah. No, I think that's a generally accepted, like, take, is that the first episode was pretty bad. It wasn't, like, the worst episode I've ever seen. There's definitely episodes of King of the Hill that I like less than that. But it wasn't great. But I think it was just basically they needed to do a major exposition dump to get everybody ready for, you know, King of the Hill coming back. And then now these other episodes feel like regular King of the Hill episodes. And really, this is, like, one of the most successful revivals out there. I think it still has, like, 100% on Rotten Tomatoes and, like, 99 or 98% of an audience score. So, you know, I've been seeing memes where they're talking about, like, you know, Futurama, this is how you do it kind of thing.
Yeah. Yeah, the first episode was a little rough. Not unwatchable. Still funny. But these two have killed it. Like, so I'm excited. I definitely laughed out loud. Also, it feels like you didn't have to watch the first, like, the past seasons.
Mm-hmm.
It feels like you could jump in and just understand it all. So, I don't know. I'm excited for episode 4.
Yep. Well, cool. Well, with that, I thank you all for listening to us, and I hope to see you again. Until then, I'm Jason.
And I'm Jim.
Bye.
Bye.